All righty. Well, today is the third week of our working with our genius. And let's just go ahead and go into an opening before we jump into the material. Ooh. So let's actually just close your eyes and become aware of actually feeling, sensing, knowing your strengths, knowing your genius, and just begin to have a bit of a felt sense around it. And maybe notice if it would be optimal to shift your posture, stand up, put your shoulders back. Just be aware of what's a strong posture for you. Just go ahead and take a couple deep breaths here, being aware of breathing more slowly and deeply than usual. And just know that this is available to you at any time to become more physically, viscerally aware of the strength of you, of the genius of you, and that not only do you get a felt sense of yourself in this way, but also just by pausing, being aware that with this space, you're more available to your genius. And so we begin. So maybe before we jump into the meat of the material, it might be nice just to say a few words for each of us about where we are with our own genius. Who might like to start?
I guess where I am is I don't know exactly what we're talking about with genius because, of course, I'm behind.
Sure. And this particular module did not have a bunch of, you know how usually each week we build on it or we do something else. This one just had a worksheet on the first week, and then we've been working with it ever since, just going deeper each time. So the idea, the gist of that particular worksheet was if you were following somebody around who had your top strengths and you were noticing what they looked like, the idea is to just become a little bit warmed up to, oh, somebody who has these strengths, this might be some ways they'd show up really powerfully, and this might be some ways they'd show up powerfully. And somehow by making it not us, it seems a little easier than when it is us. So that's what we've been looking at. And basically looking at clues around that too. Like we also look at core values. Janet sent me her manifesting blueprint. So it's like, here's all these puzzle pieces. And so what might this equal? So it's not necessarily an easy thing you can answer in 2 minutes if you haven't been sort of in the conversation with yourself, if that makes sense. But you might have clues you want to share.
Right, so, and I feel like that's kind of my constant conversation. So,
so where are you at it to, in it today?
For me, when I go back to the places where I am most clear and the most or like the tools I use to pull me out of the harder places in my life.
Sure.
It always comes to a communion with the divine, which I see as the ecstatic experience. So, like, it's funny, I was thinking about happiness and ecstasy the other day, and I've been listening to Mark Manson, the author of The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And he was talking about happiness is something that's fleeting, that there's just all these things that go on in life. And for us to really survive it in a way that can bring us satisfaction, we have to focus on values and values that really matter. And he says that focusing on happiness is not one of those things. Because once you focus on happiness, then you're already in a place of feeling lack, which makes you unhappy.
Damn.
So, I know. So I was thinking that in terms of my version of the ecstatic experience and how I find those things in all of the places, you know, from dark depression to anger to fantastic highs. And I think it's a gift that I can feel that and find that in all of those places. And so I would almost put that communion, which I see it as, and the ecstatic experience with the divine and nature and life as perhaps genius.
And you're back to communion.
Yeah, I was thinking the last call I was on was when we were talking about, I forget, the core values?
Maybe.
I think so. And I was going through the list, and I was talking about presence, and I was talking about that connection with the divine, which I think we all kind of felt. And the word that came to me later to describe that was communion. And I'm realizing that as I'm thinking about it, that, you know, those words that I was pulling out in terms of my core values, they feel like my geniuses. So maybe I'm not totally grokking genius, because I think, oh, presence, that feels like something that's a genius. And so perhaps I don't understand fully the definition of how it all comes together.
And I think it's going to be different for every person. And I think that probably for most people, there's at least several areas, maybe for you guys with a lot of thinking strength, maybe even more than several, where your genius can show up. So it's not like just one activity, you know, I write a book on communion and there's my genius. I don't view it like that. I don't know if there are people who do, but it's sort of more like I've been paying attention to when am I fully engaged and fulfilled, even if maybe it's hard, or even if I wouldn't necessarily think that's the smartest, coolest thing ever. But when all strengths are firing, when all core values are involved, when we're in our manifesting blueprint, like when all of that lines up, there's a pretty rare contribution there.
Yeah.
Does that answer what you're looking at or bring up more questions?
Yeah, so like I feel like in some sometimes I've felt that before, when almost like you said, when everything lines up, all the archetypes, all the desires, all the pieces of the manifestation blueprint, all of the core values, they all boil down to me into this sensation of alignment that's just like, oh, here I am. And that place isn't always easy. I mean, it might be beautiful, but it doesn't mean that whatever's happening there is easy, as in not difficult, or even, and it's certainly not easy to find, at least not always. And yet when I do find it, it's almost like I stumbled on it. It's like, oh, this is one of those moments.
Yes. Yes. I remember having one of those. I think it was in our first book club, and I probably told you guys at the time, because I was in Denver. I had a chiropractic appointment, and it was going to be too close to the time of the call. So I went and sat in this park and talked to you guys, and I really don't remember the content of what we did that day, but it was just so wonderful. The wind was a little too high to really be talking on the phone in the park, so I kept kind of adjusting. But to be with the material and to be with you all and to be sitting on the ground, it's like, look, it's me and my genius.
Yeah.
It was great. And it also, it sort of challenged my sensibility about what's professional. You know, if you're leading something on the phone, you shouldn't have wind whistling in the background. And it's like, well, the wind is here.
Right.
So, Janet, how about for you? When you put all of that together in your beautiful artistic way and you looked at all of that, what ahas came out for you?
Well, to me, what I saw was, what I basically did was I took my strengths, my core values, my core desired feelings, and the manifesting blueprint from Didi.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just started writing them all down, and then I could see as I was writing the manifesting things that where it was connecting to the strengths and the core values. And so it was like the first one is, there's either similarity or, like, I don't know what the other thing is, but the other end is differences.
Contrast.
Yeah. So
yep.
my genius in that would be similarity. So I want to be connected to people who are similar to me, and I want to serve people who are similar to me. And so then it brought up connectedness and input and empathy.
Mm.
And then for the core values, it brought in play and connect and empower. And then I realized one day, though, I don't know when it was, I took my core values and my core desired feelings, and they pretty much just, every core value fits every core desired feeling almost. It was kind of crazy. And so to me, it's like everything's connected to everything, connected to everything.
Janet, will you talk more about that? Like, more about that connection that you just started to see. Can you be more specific?
Well, all right. Last week, we came up with one time in my life where I just felt always, it was like a magazine designer job that I had. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I was kind of like, it fit in all my good things. And then so we listed up like the things I needed for my genius to thrive. So it was like creative freedom and fun and having hard deadlines and having variety instead of routine, or variety in the routine, and then being in charge of myself, just those kind of things. And so then we talked about the manifesting blueprint. And so my homework was to see how those all connected.
Yeah.
And so when I would like the similarity, what it says about similarity is to surround yourself with like-minded people and serve them. And that would be the best way to manifest. in that section is to do it with like-minded people instead of trying to, you know, connect with people who are different than you and trying to serve people who aren't like you.
Oh, interesting.
And so to me, then I was like, well, that brings up, you know, one of my strengths is connectedness and then empathy and then also kind of having the input from the people who are like me would be good. And then when I did my core values, so like I thought, if I'm around people who are similar to me, it'll be like connect and it'll be playful and it'll be empowering. And then my core desired feelings, I did embrace. So I would embrace my people and they would embrace me back.
I love that.
And then my other one is queen of the universe. And so I was like, you know, I would be queen of that universe. So to me, it all kind of like, you know, I could see things. And so like the number two manifesting thing is either process or outcome, I think. And so my best manifesting thing would be is the process part. And so it's like experience over outcome. Actions and choices are in line with divine self-expression. And the goal is more about who I become through the process, not actually accomplishing things.
Uh-huh.
And how I am. And so then I, you know, the strengths that to me that go with that are learner and ideation and activator and positivity.
And input.
Oh, and input. I didn't even put that one down. But, you know.
That's hilarious.
I'm experiencing things, and that's how I, instead of focusing on the goal, I'm focusing on the process. And then for my core values, it brings up create, play, and expand. So you're expanding through the creation of things. And then for my core desired feelings, I put enrapture, sparkly, star shiny, and queen of the universe. Because to me, like, I think, and it's true, the experiences of what I'm doing when I'm creating or doing something makes me feel those ways. You know, it makes me sparkly, star shiny.
Yeah.
And so it was just a really interesting thing how, and I did, like, my top 13 or 14 strengths. And so, you know, each different manifesting thing brought up different strengths. And it made sense that if I'm living in my strengths and living in my core desired feelings and values, that these manifesting things should line up.
Seriously, that's really kind of wild, because think about, I don't know where the manifesting blueprint came from. Do you know, like, is it something that came from something that was downloaded from the Akashic Records or an entity or something?
I don't actually know.
I don't know either. But do you know Ephraim?
I get the impression that the person that Dee Dee trained with on her current style of Akashic Record readings developed the manifestation blueprint also. Whether or not it was downloaded or just developed by her, I don't know.
Oh, okay. So,
but I believe in person.
Okay, gotcha. So, if it were developed by her as opposed to downloaded, that would be a little different than what I was thinking, because the whole Strength Finder thing just has so much research behind it. But of course, it was developed by somebody also, but probably in a very different process. So that's just fascinating to me that then they could kind of overlay each other like you're describing, Janet. I now pulled up your document to look at it, and when you're describing it, it makes more sense. Oh yes, for your one where you're being reinventive, that's input, learner, ideation, connectedness, futuristic, it's create, play, magic, expand. It's in rapture. Queen of the universe is sparkly, star shiny. It's like, oh my gosh, that's kind of incredible, really. Did she answer what you were asking about, Ephraim? Because that's way, when you describe all that, now I get it at a much deeper level.
Yeah, she did answer it. And I love, it's almost like the process that you were doing, Janet, was to look at your manifestation blueprint and then take all of the other information you've gathered about yourself and see which pieces tie in and how, and noticing how amazing it was that so many pieces just sort of are always talking to each other.
Yeah. And to me, it was like, you know, stop worrying about all the stuff that you're not strong in and stop kind of worrying about all the rest of that stuff and just like live in your strengths.
Right.
Yeah.
What you're interested in and, you know, do what, where you're really, when you're living in all of this, you're like really contributing to the universe. Instead of fighting about it within yourself. I'm always fighting about it within myself.
Me too.
Me too. And you know what? Part of it is for all of us, we don't tend to have the strengths that are like revered, worshipped by society. You know, things like achiever, discipline, responsibility. That's like what gets the prize. You know, that's what you should be, but none of us are. So I've got to tell you a teeny personal story. This probably is around genius, actually. I started my first businesses when I was in my early 20s with my sister Jenny, who's 2 years younger than me. So our first successful business, she was 20, I was 22. And she's got 4 strategic thinking strengths and achiever. And she's brilliant at some things business-wise. You know, her interest is small business, and her thing now is search engine optimization. Obviously, back in the 80s, that wasn't it. But when Google came around, she says that Google thinks like her. And I'm like, okay, that's not too arrogant. But we had a parting of the ways along the way, because she told me one time that all I did was water the plants and remember people's birthdays, and she had to do everything else. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm out of here. So that was back in the 90s. Come full circle now to about a week ago, she calls me panicked because she needs some coaching, and she's literally never asked me for coaching about anything, but she has a people problem, and she's got a woman who's doing some sales for her, and that woman is going through like 3 different kinds of personal trauma, so you can imagine she's not too effective in her work, and my sister's ready to kill her. And it's like, well, let's talk about that. And so, of course, we won't go into all of that beyond the confines of client confidentiality. But the next day, she sent me an effusive text about how helpful it was to her and how she now has new perspectives. And I thought, wow, like it took this long, but now I have it in writing that she gets it. You know, she gets the point of my strengths, and they were actually of value to her. So that was a lovely victory for me this week, and lovely healing of, you know, this thing with us, because I'm like, yeah, you're not going to put that on me. I get that your strengths fit what society says you're supposed to do, but, you know, my strengths are different and they're valuable, and I'll just go do my own thing for a few decades.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It is.
What do you guys like about it?
I like that it's true. I mean, I don't know that any 3 of us have we don't have those like achiever kick-ass you know, out there business skills or something, but what we do is important. And it's nice to have some recognition that what you do is important from somebody who didn't recognize that before.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, I got that too. And I also get the pressure of how difficult it is not to have the ones that society reveres, to not be that person.
And yeah, like, but if we, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, if we try to do that, you know, if we try to be discipline, responsibility, restorative, we're not going to do it very well. And so there'll never be the opportunity for genius, you know. And it seems like, especially now that our world's going more tech, I'll bet you that thinking strengths are being revered more also, as long as there's executing people to handle them. But somewhere along the way, where's the magic and where's the sparkle and where's the connection? And saying that, it sounds so like, it sounds like we're all having a tea party and, you know, they're mastering the world, but really they're mastering the physical world. And all of us have an ability to tap into the deeper world, which may actually become more necessary than it has been. I bet you that there's an increase of people valuing being able to sort of the whole thing of be in the world but not of it. I'll bet you that's becoming more valuable. And that just came out. I had no idea we were going to talk about this.
Well, we never know, right?
Right.
I've read several things that are saying exactly that. That's
no way. I haven't read any of them.
Yeah. Where it's like people are more, just in general, like the vibration of the world is raising, whether it seems so or not. And so people are becoming more interested in the spiritual realm and the other realms besides just working your ass off every day.
Fascinating. Huh? Well, that's hopeful, well beyond our geniuses.
Yeah.
And of course, there is the hard part of that, which, you know, I've been thinking about for a while, which is that that even though that part is coming out maybe a little bit more and maybe it becomes a little more conscious as people get older, it's still not valued. And it feels like it's not valued by the larger part of society that has the biggest voice. And so it makes it even more harder to own the genius, that kind of genius and that kind of strength.
Well, and the reason it's not valued yet is because they haven't figured out how to monetize it very well yet.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
I wonder, though, if there'll be some kind of tipping point at some point where monetizing isn't the only way to assess value.
We could hope so.
Mm-hmm. So I realize we're go ahead, Janet.
And we are on the cusp of going into the Aquarian age, which is the we age, which is everybody is going to be in, like, there'll be way more peace in the world and more value on the spiritual and the esoteric things. So, you know, we're right at the edge of it.
When do we go into it? Is it in our lifetime?
It started in the 60s, but, you know, it was like 5,000 years of Piscean age and now Aquarian age, so that, you know, the 10,000 years, the transition is kind of gray, but they think right now is the, like, the dying grasp of the Piscean age, which is kind of the patriarchy and what's going on right now. So we're kind of going to be on the downhill slide pretty soon towards it.
Interesting. So hard to say whether we'll be alive or not when it's actually really clear that we're solidly in it.
Yeah, it might be at least 20 more years or so.
Interesting.
So we'll probably all still be alive. But
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Ephraim.
I certainly see it shifting, for sure.
Me too. Even in all the chaos of the absurd patriarchy still behaving absurdly.
Well, and that's part of the catalyst of pushing us into the next stage.
Yeah. It
They're
makes
there
sense.
To be the catalyst to make wake people up and go, oh, wait, this isn't how we want to live.
Yeah, we didn't mean that. I got you. Yeah, that ever-loving contrast. All right. Well, we, I don't know, we got to someplace that isn't quite genius. So if we go back a little bit specifically to thinking about what constitutes genius, or how would we recognize genius, or how would we call forth more of it? It seems like by looking at all of these things, strengths, core values, core desired feelings, needs, our manifesting blueprint, that we have clues, but then there's some kind of serendipitous magic that seems to create an experience or make a moment. I don't know. Do you have a sense that we can create them more? We can have a spaciousness that allows them to be more likely? How would we nurture and grow our genius?
You know, I was thinking at the beginning about how easy it is to lose in a day or a few days of, like, you know, forget who I am or what I'm focusing on and stuff like that. And then I get on a call like this and I'm like, oh, wow, that was, it's just so nice to reconnect and to remember how important it is for me to focus on this and think about it and feel it and move towards it. And so I think that calls like this and activities, rituals, whatever our personal ways of reconnecting with ourselves are ways to make it more likely.
Yeah.
And the more often that we can fill our day with that focus and intention, it just makes it more likely. You know, I've had clients that have had, you know, spontaneous ecstatic experiences, and they're just like, oh my gosh, I want to experience that again. And I say, you know, meditate and feel it and get into that place and, you know, breathe outside and look at the clouds and things like that. And so that you can make it more likely and get there. And on one level, they have like a block to thinking, you know, how can I ever get to that place again? And so it makes it harder to get there. And then, like in my own practice, I feel like most of the time with a breath and some focus and some realignment, I can get to a place that feels like communion on some level. And so when I look at those two experiences, it seems like it's a matter of believing that you can get there and not being afraid of not getting there. You know, it's like you have to respect the process. If you have communion or genius as the outcome, then it's almost like it makes it harder to achieve. Mm-hmm. And yet to have it as an intention, which is different, to respect the fact that, oh, I might not make it today, but these things have gotten me there before, or these are the things that I believe will help me to expand it inside of myself, then that leads to a practice where maybe it is as accessible as what I feel like I have, and I still feel like I have so much more to discover.
Yeah.
There's like this infiniteness to the scale of certain things in life. I love thinking about this because I'm a process person too, and it's sort of like the things that are important to me, like communion and creativity and ecstatic experience and even things like cooking or writing or all of it. It's all infinitely progressible. So you can always have the part of you that's like, oh, I'm here at this spot and I can conjure that. And I remember 20 years ago when I couldn't. And I wonder what it's going to be like in 20 more years because I realize that I can continue to improve this particular piece of what I love. And I may look back on, you know, this moment in 20 years and be like, oh my gosh, I was such a beginner then. And look at what I have now. And, oh, I still feel like a beginner, you know?
Yeah. I love that idea of, you didn't say this exactly, but sort of like just inviting it every day. It's like, hey, I'm here. Created some space. I'm hanging out in my core desired feelings as best I can. Whoops, there went something. Now I'm not there so much. Well, that's okay. I'm present again. Something might happen. It might not. But I'm available. It's sort of like an invitation. And yeah. Keeping a loose focus. So that's probably what you mean by intention, that it's not a, I got to do this, but I have this general intention to experience my genius, to experience the ecstasy, to be available. I've noticed it's something as simple as being a little bit more bold in what I tell a stranger. Like I'll usually notice something really wonderful about a stranger and then think, well, you know, we don't know each other. That would freak them out if I told them that. And so I don't tell them. And lately I have been occasionally and it's like, well, that feels good. And they usually receive it really well. And even if they don't, it's okay. It's like, well, there you go. You decide what to do with it. But it helps me realize I see things that other people don't see, or maybe other people do, but they don't tell them, and I'm willing to tell them sometimes. So how fun is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Janet, is there anything else you want to say in closing today?
No, I just, I mean, everything that Ephraim said about that, and then I like the invitation part, but, you know, setting the intention and holding it loosely, I like that part, where you're not trying to, like, force it every day, but just having the intention that you're going to live in your strengths and your genius.
Yes.
I wonder if the holding it loosely part is kind of like what I was saying about happiness. You know, if you focus on being happy all the time and you're not happy, yeah. Then you're going to be unhappy about it. And
right. Yeah.
So if you're willing to hold it loosely, then it's like, you know, I'm cool with what happens. I I set the invitation this morning or whenever I did it, and there it is out there, and by holding it loosely, I'm not so attached that I'm unhappy, but I'm grateful for when it arrives.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been reading. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I've been reading this book on and off for years, and I've never finished it because I just sort of open it randomly or whatever, but it's called Callings by a guy named Greg Lavoie. And one of the things that I've been working with, which is in the prologue of the book, it's like I can read the prologue of the book 27,000 times and just be enriched. But he talks about being in constant dialogue with whatever is calling you. And by letting it be a dialogue and being open to it all the time, it's like you can have this conversation all the time with this genius or this pulsing divinity or this whatever it is that is guiding your life that confuses not only you, but confuses even more the people around you. And without the dialogue, then the invitation, the looseness of it, and then sometimes the focus in it, it's just without that, it's so easy to get lost. Which is why, you know, like in the past few days, you know, coming to this call, it's like I realize, oh, wow, I've been a little bit lost in my thoughts. I'm worrying about, you know, the dogs or the my parents or whatever it is that I'm worrying about. And I forget that, oh, wait, I forgot to be in dialogue with whatever it is that's calling me.
I love that, and whatever it is that's calling you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right about that. Go ahead, Janet.
Oh, I was just saying sometimes it's calling and I have turned off the volume completely.
You don't even hear a whisper, so you have no idea.
Yeah. Because you get caught up in the BS of other stuff that doesn't matter.
You know, a few weeks ago, I had a really good latte at a place in Denver, and then I was back in New Mexico, and I go to the same place in New Mexico, and there's different baristas, and they all are pretty good. They have slight differences, but one day there was this woman there that it was just exceptional. I'm like, what in the world? So I actually said to her, because I like couldn't not, what have you done to this? It's so delicious. And she said, well, it's microfoam. And she launched into this whole thing about microfoam, which I would think I have no interest in, but I have such a huge interest in a delicious latte that I learned a little teeny PhD about microfoam. And then I couldn't even believe it when I said to her, do you work a regular schedule? And she said, yeah, I'm here, da, 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 da. And I said, could I come study with you one day? And this is so not me. And I then realized after, oh, she said, yes, bring a notebook. And then I haven't actually done it yet, but I know what her schedule is. And obviously I'm not there right now. I'm in Denver. But when I came back to Denver, I had the latte there and I'm like, oh my God, it's microfoam that I'm in love with. Who knew? And so it's like I have this relationship with microfoam, which I do kind of understand from her very chemical, physics, whatever it is, description. And it was like, I was ecstatic about that, which I just find hilarious. And it's like, what if I didn't let myself notice how wonderful that was? Because it doesn't seem like me, but it was calling me, man. So thank you, Ephraim.
I love that.
Right? So In wrapping up, I came across a quote in a book I'm reading called The Way of Mastery, and it really struck me last night when I was reading it, and I highlighted it for us today. I don't know if it's the best closing, but we didn't talk about it before now, and I think it's worth sharing. So is there anything else either of you want to say before we close?
I don't think so.
Okay. So it's just a question, a sentence, and it says, have you ever had the feeling that you're putting more energy into staying constricted than you are into allowing expansion? So I'll leave you with that question. Are you putting more energy into staying constricted than allowing expansion? And my guess is it's not a one-time answer. It's just being more aware of, am I putting energy in this moment into staying constricted, or am I willing to allow some expansion?
That's a good question.
Right? Yeah. So thank you. It's so fun to participate with you guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank we don't
you.
Meet
I
next
just,
week. You're, yep.
I just wrote down that question as a daily contemplation.
Lovely. All right. So we don't meet next week, but we are back together on May 1st. Yes, May 1st. And what will we be talking about? Oh, my goodness. Inside Out. Yes. So I'm very excited about that. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
You bet.
Yeah,
thank you. All righty. Bye-bye.
Sorry.
Bye.